Chapter 19. Competitive Advantage. Kairos awoke to find that the wards that had surrounded his bedroom had gone away. He could see the sources of a pair of guards standing outside the door, but suspected that they were there to keep others out, not keep him within. At the foot of his bed floated a message. Not the paper and ink sort, but Kairos understood its meaning clearly enough. It was a wooden chest that he remembered from Brannis's past, and atop it lay a wooden sword. Kairos got up and lifted the lid of the chest, finding, as he suspected he would, a suit of Brannis's old armor. It was simple, battered, and smelled strongly of the light oil that kept it from rusting in storage. He, or rather Brannis, had not worn it in years. It was a suit that had fitted him well enough when he had commissioned it, but he had been a lad then, fully grown but not filled out. Had Brannis tried to put it on, there would have been fist-sized gaps at the sides, had the straps even reached to buckle it on. Kairos's face curled into an annoyed sneer as he realized it would likely fit him just fine. No, Kairos decided, I will not play this morning's game. He can give me a proper order if he wants me to obey. Brannis thought to match wits with Roshan, pass all his little tests and see through his ruses. I will hold things together here as best I can for now, but I will send him back his Grand Marshal as soon as I am able. Of course, I should still go see what he wants of me.
A fine morning for a friendly sparring match, Roshan commented, despite the cool, rainy weather that few would have chosen to describe as any sort of fine. I see you have not dressed for it, however.
Kairos wore one of Brannis's outfits. It hung loose about him, just as Brannis's old, too-small armor would seem to have been his size.
I heard rumors in the halls on my way down here that Iridan returned late last night, Kairos said. You can spar with him this morning instead of me. I still do not feel quite up to swordplay yet.
Kairos looked about, noticing that a larger number of spectators than usual had turned out to watch the practice session. Nearly the whole of the inner circle was in attendance. There were a number of other prominent members of the Imperial Circle as well, not to mention a few knights, the hangers-on at court, and a number of noblemen that were in the city for the impending coronation. Some were down around the outskirts of the courtyard. Others looked down from the balconies surrounding it.
I had not expected to be your opponent this morning. I had expected you to be Iridan's.
Roshan smiled to him.
Iridan!
The warlock shouted out into the courtyard, where Iridan was conversing with his new oath father.
Look who is up and about!
Brannith!
Iridan called out, smiling and revealing a handful of half-regrown teeth, giving him the look of a schoolboy. He jogged over to see his friend.
I had heard about your accident,
Iridan paused, rolled his eyes in frustration, and tried again.
Accident. You all white? You look like you've been wung out like a waff-quaff.
Kairos frowned, fairly certain that he had just been compared to a damp rag. Did everyone in Acardia think of him thus as well, and just never said anything since they had no expectation that he ought to be otherwise?
I ought to be fine, Roshan tells me, though I have seen better days.
Kairos tried to keep in character as best he could. In truth, he felt fine. He had slept well, for despite an unfamiliarity about it, the bed was finer than any he had slept in. His dreams had reassured him as well. Brannis would find passage off Dinku Appa unless something odd befell him, and he had even rid himself of the attentions of the island girls.
Why had I not thought of that? He wondered.
I had thought Wafan was joking or toying with me when he threatened to pit you against me this morning. Now I see that I could probably knock you over with a broom,
Iridan joked, clearly enjoying seeing a Brannis that he might be able to defeat in a fight.
Well, as I had no other opponent prepared for you this morning, and Brannis is not going to oblige, perhaps we will skip the sparring this morning. Unless, of course, you would prefer to challenge me, Roshan offered.
Iridan took a half step back away from his father, clearly not amused by the prospect. There was no trick to be used against Roshan, no clever ploy to find victory against some foe he fought on equal ground, using only his skills with a blade, lest he render the contest moot with fire or lightning. Iridan shook his head, enthusiastically declining.
Very well, then. Get out there, and I shall send you an opponent from among our esteemed spectators for this morning's draw.
Roshan smiled, shooing Iridan out into the midst of the courtyard. Kairos noticed that four extra basins had been placed around and filled with water. Kairos wondered whether Roshan might finally think Iridan was ready to face him. He looked about to see who else might be chosen. Dolvain was on one of the upper balconies, gazing down. Iridan had never bested him, and he had long said that he thought Roshan would require that of Iridan before he ever drew against the warlock himself. Caladhras was talking with Shaedor on one of the low terraces. Caladhras at least was a possibility, though Shaedor might acquit himself well if it was him. The rest of the inner circle were all there, he realized. Perhaps Iridan would be facing more than one. Kairos felt a nudge at his back.
Go get him,
Roshan whispered. Kairos's eyes widened and his knees went weak.
Not me.
His only experience in a draw was the one time Brannis had done it in his final days at the academy. Brannis had felt like he had showed up to a horse race with a child's toy stick horse for a mount, and Kairos remembered the feeling vividly. Brannis had never even been able to watch a draw, and now Kairos was being thrown in against Iridan, who was working his way through the ranks of the inner circle, and near as Kairos could figure would rank around fourth or so among them, were they holding to the academy's method of determining such. Kairos sleepwalked to the middle of the courtyard, his thoughts running to escape the crowd of curious eyes that pursued him.
He wants to see what I am made of. I just told myself I would not get caught up in his tests. I refused to don Brannis's armor, and now here I am. I wonder if I had sparred, would I have been spared this, or would it have been even worse, being roundly thrashed by a warrior that Danil could probably best?
Is this a joke? Iridan called out to Roshan. I heard about his accident and his forf, but wee? Try him against someone from the academy, like you did with me and Ford fighting. Just look at him, Roshan called back.
Kairos blushed, knowing that everyone was now probably ogling him in the ether. He could only wonder what they were seeing, but when he scanned the crowd, he saw people blinking away their ether vision, or squinting at him with pained expressions, even though squinting the eyes did nothing to help when viewing the ether.
You see, Roshan stated. Now prepare yourselves, both of you.
Roshan paused a moment for them to compose themselves as they readied for the draw. Iridan looked wary and was not looking straight at Brannis, or Kairos, at all. Kairos felt ill with nerves. It was un-Brannis-like of him, but he could not help himself. He had nearly seared his skull dry in his first attempts with ether.
I knew nothing of what I was doing.
He had lost control in Marker's Point and destroyed a neighborhood.
I was panicking then, but this is just a game, a practice. I'll be safe.
He had drawn the source right out of men.
They were thugs, right beside me. These are sorcerers, and Iridan is the closest, 10 paces away.
He had burned down a ship, but that just proved he was just a fire hurler.
This is not about skill. It is about power and endurance. I held back the sea. I can do this.
Draw,
Roshan commanded, and Kairos was shaken from his musings by the curious feeling of ether rushing away from him. Kairos had been using his draw for months, but it was the first time he had ever experienced anyone else fighting him for control of the ether. Startled and a bit disoriented, Kairos made an attempt to pull back. There was really no trick. Iridan was not pulling very hard at it, and Kairos matched him.
You have always been a good friend, Iridan. Thank you for starting out going easy on me for my first try.
As Iridan gradually increased his draw, so did Kairos, keeping them as evenly matched as he could. Kairos could not tell how long they had been at it, but watching in his dual ether and light vision, he noticed something he was unprepared for. Iridan was struggling.
Hold!
Came the call from Rashan. Instantly, the even flow of ether to the two combatants turned into a torrent flowing solely to Kairos. It took a moment, but Kairos collected his thoughts and stopped his own draw as well. He looked on in dismay as he could see the strain on Iridan's face. A light rain fell, but Kairos could tell Iridan's brow was wet with sweat as well.
I feel nothing, Kairos realized. This ether is no burden at all. I must have had tenfold as much passing through me on the Denku Appa beaches when I walled off that Katamic Sea storm, and tenfold that when I sent myself here.
Kairos swallowed, wondering what he ought to do. Though he had never watched draws, he understood the etiquette. Iridan had let off a show of force the first time he had claimed victory at the Academy's tournament. Doing more than just blowing steam from the basins was gloating. Worse yet was to do nothing afterward. Holding onto one's ether beyond the end of the contest was a sign of contempt. Kairos could easily have managed such a feat, he knew. Four basins, the four on Kairos's side of the courtyard, shattered as superheated steam exploded from them. Kairos went to one knee, as he had seen other defeated sorcerers do, swaying slightly and breathing heavily. Steam erupted from Iridan's shortly thereafter, the victor making no further claim of dominance over his vanquished opponent. Iridan walked unsteadily over to Kairos and offered him a hand up.
"Well fought, Braniff,"
he congratulated Kairos. Kairos muttered something gracious back, and the two of them went off to a corner where a table was set with refreshments to replenish them after their match. At the edge of the practice field, greedy, immortal eyes fixed hungrily on Kairos. Conversations broke out all about him, discussing what they had just seen. A raw talent that had just given Iridan, a fine duelist in his own right, all he could handle. But Rashan had watched more carefully.
"You noticed too, I assume?"
Caladrius kept his voice low, so that only the warlock heard him. Rashan nodded slowly.
"Nice enough lad, that Brennus, but I would not want to cross him. I certainly would not want to step in against him in a draw after seeing that."
Caladrius chuckled softly.
"Think you could best him?"
Rashan did not respond. Juliana's fingers caressed the page as she read. The book was well over 100 summers old, and not preserved at all by magic. It felt old, much more so than the heavily protected works that were given to the children studying at the academy. There were treatises on basic ether theory and the early history of the empire that were over 1,000 summers old. They had been handled by 10-summer-old boys throughout their entire existence, and yet they did not seem so old as the book she perused. The Warlock Prophecies, its title proclaimed it. It was a simple enough description, but that was not what had drawn her to it. It was the book that Iliardra had been reading, the one she left floating in the air when she vanished the previous night. Juliana had no way to be sure, but she suspected that it had been left for her to take. Though she had flipped through it and read several sections, she had marked the page Iliardra had left it on. Four tongues wise, four tongues foolish, four tongues false. False whispers in foolish ears will doom the wise, and the false shall rule with a crown of chains. Juliana was not sure what was meant exactly, but if it was left as a message for her, she suspected what it might. 12 tongues in total probably meant the inner circle, especially if the author truly was a warlock. If the prophecy was meant to tell about Rashan's return to the empire, it implied that the three conspirators he executed were among the wise. It would also seem to say that he was one of the false, though the crown of chains was still a bit opaque to her. A knock on her door startled her, and she hastily shut the book, leaving it face down with the spine toward the wall so that the title was not easily seen.
"Come in," she called out.
"My pardon, Sorceress Juliana," one of the palace messengers apologized. "The regent has requested your attendance in the lower levels."
"Tell him I shall be down directly," she replied.
"Gut that demon. I had thought that Iridan returning and Brannis's condition would be enough to distract him. Roshan has entirely too much attention to spread around if he can still spare it in my direction.
I will wait outside. I am to escort you there personally. Please be prompt. The regent is waiting, the messenger instructed, then excused himself, closing the door behind him. Juliana sighed. She took several books off the bookshelf and hid the warlock prophecies in the rear, placing the removed books back in front of it. She stepped back and gave the shelf an appraising look. She pulled a few more books off the shelf and replaced them as well, just so that the one section was not the only one to have been disturbed. She moved to the mirror to see whether she was fit for public viewing. As she smoothed her hair into less of a tangle, she saw a disheveled bed behind her in the reflection. It was a testament to the fact she had not yet left her chambers that morning, for as soon as she left, servants would sneak in and tidy everything up properly. Iridan had returned the prior night, quite late. She had been asleep, but awakened when he entered the room. It was dark, so she just remained motionless and listened, not even turning to the ether to see him properly. She heard him change out of his travel-stained clothes and realized he was planning to stay. He had not even realized she was awake until he climbed into bed next to her. He did not seem surprised, just shy. The only thing he said was, "I'm sorry," to which she had answered, "Me too." They had curled together as they fell asleep, sharing each other's warmth in an unspoken agreement that they would both try to make things work between them, though it was rather likely Iridan and she had different ideas about how that would play out. Since she was going to see the warlock, it was likely she would be seeing either Iridan or Brannis, quite possibly both of them. She wanted to look good in any event. Once she was satisfied she had done her best toward that end, she swept out of the bedchamber, trailing the messenger in her wake. "Where are we meeting the warlock?" she asked, not bothering to slow her pace or look back. The messenger was just an annoyance. "The dungeons," was the reply. Juliana's stride faltered, but she kept on following the messenger.
"What are we doing down here?" Kyrus demanded.
He, Iridan, and Roshan were in the lowest level of the palace dungeons, a desolate, deserted warren of stone passages lined with cells. It was lit with a dim, angry red glow that Kyrus knew to be magical, and not the light of the demonic furnaces it tried to resemble. The world Brannis knew looked so different to Kyrus's eyes, with the added depth of seeing all that was magical for what it truly was. "We are waiting for one more," Roshan replied, looking at neither Kyrus nor Iridan as he stood with them. "And then what?" Kyrus pressed. He was not liking his surroundings, and liked being kept in the figurative dark more than he disliked the actual shadowy darkness he found himself standing in.
"I would like to say that you have learned a little patience, but she is almost here," Roshan commented dryly.
Iridan said nothing. He was not in a mood to be stepping into an argument involving the warlock, even if Brannis was one of the few to ever come out on the winning side against him. The messenger departed with a bow as soon as Juliana had gotten within sight of the warlock. Kyrus had studiously avoided paying her too much attention as he lay in his supposed sickbed. But now he had no such excuse. She'd looked like every dream Brannis ever had of her, with her reddish gold hair and bright, mischievous eyes shining green. He had to shake himself mentally to stop from filling in the missing details that her clothing hid.
"She is Brannis's, or Iridan's now, I suppose. She is not for me. There is a book in Roshan's office that tells of the eligible sorcerers for marriage, and I was ruled out. I cannot be hers, could never be hers, will never be hers."
The thoughts rang hollow. He could not deceive himself. Those decisions had been made when Brannis had shown no signs of talent, of magical talent at least.
"What is this all about?" Juliana demanded to know.
She was among the scant few to dare using that tone with the warlock. For whatever reason, he allowed her continued transgressions to pass unchallenged.
"Well, now that we are all here, I only have to explain this game once," Roshan began. "Game?"
Juliana asked.
What game?
She had saved Kairos the trouble of asking the same thing.
I have before me the three best unrealized talents that I know of in the Empire. I'm not saying the most talented, mind you, but rather the ones whose ultimate potential I am least sure of.
Today we are going to take a step closer to finding out just what I have in the three of you, Roshan explained, sounding like a lecturing instructor from the academy, which Kairos supposed he was, or at least once was.
You don't have me at all. I told you as much already, or don't you remember?
Juliana snapped. This is different. That was for my personal service. This is for the Kadrin Empire, and there is no refusing such service. Unless, of course, you would prefer to live elsewhere, Roshan informed her darkly. Kairos, largely via Brannis, had never been able to quite round up the way Roshan could put such a dreadful weight behind his words. He was like an actor or an orator. When he wanted to convey an awful fate, he needed no awful words by which to do it. All three of them understood thoroughly that refusal was not an option.
So what is the game? Kairos asked, trying to get them back to the task at hand and away from veiled threats and apparently unsettled old arguments.
A simple one to explain, Roshan told them, beginning a slow walk down the cell block corridor.
And a less simple one to succeed at. I believe you all have the potential for success, though I suppose it is unlikely any of you will achieve it. You will each go inside one of these cells.
Roshan had led them down to where the doors were no longer made of iron, but of stone, hinged with magic.
Wait a moment. Doverda,
Iridan objected, or began to.
The warded cells, yes. Step inside a moment and I will explain the rest. One to a cell, mind you. I do not care who goes where. There are five cells and three of you, so take your pick.
Roshan handed a water skin to each of them and shooed them in. Iridan went in sullenly, resigned to yet another hopeless task set before him by his father, and after his morning had begun so well. Kairos paused a moment and considered objecting, but his mind was already working at the problem before it had even been explained. He stepped in warily but without complaint.
No way. I'll take a failing mark right now, if you please, Juliana protested.
Kairos had never seen her look so apprehensive. He had never seen her at all, actually. It had always been Brannis. But he had not seen such a sight either.
Oh, nonsense.
Roshan grabbed her by the arm and marched her inside. His grip was like stone. Kairos knew he was a demon, but it always seemed incongruous how strong he was, and it had caught him off guard again. Scrawny as she was, Juliana looked like she ought to have been able to shrug off the boyish warlock. She did not try to follow him back out, but Kairos heard her breath coming quickly even from his own cell.
Now all you need to do is get out after I have sealed the doors, Roshan said.
You all have given me some reason to think you might manage it. Juliana, you have a strange way with drawing ether that may help you deal with the rune's own draw. Iridan, you are excellent with runes yourself, and you have the most control among the three of you. Brannis? Well, let us just say that I think you just lack the motivation to show your capabilities. This ought to motivate you. Now, if any of you manage to get out, just find me. I will not stand here waiting. If any cannot manage their own exit, I will return in 5 days' time. At that, three doors slammed shut and sealed, the runes that kept sorcerers trapped springing to life.
5 days? He cannot mean that, Iridan thought. This is a test of patience. I can wait him out.
Iridan had heard about the secure cells in the dungeons, though he had never worked on them personally. He sat himself in the center of the cell, where he knew the pull of its draw to be weakest, feeling it gnawing at the edges of his source and trying to keep from his mind that it felt like flies swarming about him, drinking his blood a fraction of a drop at a time.
You deceitful son of a whore!
Juliana had made a leap for the door at the last moment when Roshan told them that it would be 5 days before he came to release them. She beat a hasty retreat when the draw of the walls began to claw at her source. She had never felt anything so powerful from so close. She had kept well back from Jade Fire, but it was like what she would have imagined a dragon's draw to be like. Even the staff of Galen had not felt like it was trying to burrow into her source to drink from it, the way the cell's runes did. Planting herself on the floor in the middle of the room, she was able to reduce the effects on her source enough that she could meditate. It was something Soria had done rarely since leaving the Temple of the Sun. Juliana had meditated in the Tezuan manner only a few times ever. Still, calmness and ease of mind were things she badly needed to recover. Tezuan techniques were all she could think of to manage that. In the dark, wandering the avenues of her own mind, she lost all sense of time. She hungered a little by the time she felt calm enough to address her problem rationally, so she supposed it had been a few hours. She vaguely recalled the ground shaking a bit once while she had been in her meditative trance, but she could think of no daily event to match it with that could help her mark the time. They were too far down for it to have been the kitchen staff or the goings-on at court, and anything else she could think of would have been farther still. She decided to worry about it when she was free. Her ether vision was acute, but the runes on the walls were writ small, at least the most important ones. It was at least a three-tiered rune structure, she could tell. Large runes had smaller runes carved within their thick lines, and those in turn had runes carved within them as well. The problem was that she could not get close enough to them to make out the details of the smallest ones without hurting herself. She could fight back against the cell's draw, but only barely, and not for very long. She could easily kill herself trying if she was not careful. She pursed her lips and carefully reached behind her, drawing one of her new daggers. It was the heavy one, not the fast one. She never remembered which name went with which. She held it out at arm's length in front of her, watching to see if the cell walls devoured the ether from it. Nothing. She leaned forward, braving the milder effects of the cell's draw to dangle the blade further yet into the dangerous area. Nothing. Smiling in self-satisfaction, she looked in the area of the door for a point in the runes that seemed vulnerable. Not finding any obvious weaknesses, she picked a target arbitrarily and loosed the dagger as hard as she could. It cracked against the wall satisfyingly and ricocheted away. Juliana crawled over and grabbed it before hurrying back to the center of the cell again. Once she had calmed herself again after the harrowing scramble into the cell's draw and back again, she examined the wall to see what damage she had caused.
"Well, there is a chip missing. A day or so, and maybe I can break a rune, if my aim is good and I can keep hitting the same spot. Still, that is better than five."
She threw the dagger again.
"This is my fault. Had I just drawn as hard as I could earlier, he would not have felt the need to test me, to test us like this."
Brannis had heard Rashan's tale about escaping from the very cells in which he was now trapped, but Kyrus knew little else about them. The runes were intricate and covered nearly every surface in the cell. They had a bit of a draw of their own, keeping the cell dry of stray ether. Kyrus noticed initially that the cell seemed to be trying to draw from his source as well, but he could hold it back with a bit of effort. With a chagrined chuckle, Kyrus could not help but liken the effort to ignoring the need to urinate. It was a minor biological annoyance that could be set aside with a bit of effort, and maintained without having to concentrate on it. Unaware that his companions were having a rougher go of it in their own cells, Kyrus stood close and examined the runes in great detail. It was fascinating. He had studied the stone folk's runes, which layered themselves within folded metal, and found the runes within runes concept to be a variant with similar intent. Unfortunately, without a year or three to study them, he doubted he would puzzle their workings out from the inside.
"The runes keep the door closed. My task is to get out. Runes need ether."
Kyrus stretched and shook out limbs that had grown stiff as he had been largely stationary. For how long, he could only guess, as he lost himself in thought examining the cell's workings.
Time to find out who has the stronger draw, Wall, me or you.
While Kyrus had not worked out everything about how the runes worked, he realized that for it to have its own draw, it had to be an open structure. There were ways to pull the ether back out. Kyrus put his hands on the wall next to the door. Taking a deep breath, he drew as hard as he could, as he probably should have when facing Iridan in the courtyard. All the ether that his source normally gave off was sucked back in instantly, denying the cell its continued sustenance. As Kyrus drew, the cell groaned in protest, a low, pained resonance as its workings were abused, and ether dragged through it the wrong way, as if ripping prey free from a shark's angled teeth. It did not take long before the glow of the wards in Kyrus's ether vision began to flicker and fail. When it seemed it had failed completely, he stepped in front of the door and released the ether all at once. A few moments later, he picked himself up off the floor, dazed, where the blast had left him. He had channeled the ether directly away from him, just fire hurling, with no thought to trying to harness it in any sort of spell. He knew of no spell that he could have handled with so much ether anyway. The door was gone, along with some of the surrounding wall, and a bit of the floor as well, the edges of the vaporized region still glowing red and dripping molten stone. Gone as well was the door of the cell opposite his, thankfully unoccupied. There was a channel through the far wall of that cell and into the unworked stone beyond. Kyrus walked across to the other cell, choking and coughing at the cloud of soot hanging in the air, and looked into that channel. He thought he could see an end to it, 50 or so paces in, but the glow was dimming, and he was not so curious as to venture in to look. Kyrus gave some thought to freeing Juliana and Iridan, but decided against it.
They'll be happier figuring it out on their own. I would not want to free them just before they manage it themselves. I will return in the evening if they have not gotten out by then.
Following his instructions, Kyrus headed off to track down Rashan.
I rather suspected you might find your way free of those cells, Brannis, Rashan congratulated him upon seeing him approach. So tell me, what trick did you use to get out?
He was seated in his office in the Tower of Contemplation when Kyrus finally found him. He had been attended by a number of functionaries dealing with logistics of the impending coronation, but Rashan dismissed them as soon as he saw Kyrus approaching.
No trick. I just outdrew the wall and melted it with hurled fire, Kyrus said.
Rashan laughed out loud.
You have a better sense of humor than the other Brannis ever did. I am going to enjoy having you around.
It was no joke. You only have 4 of those cells now, Kyrus replied, and I would not get too used to me being around. Once I figure out a way to find Tellurak again, I will be going back.
Hurled fire? If you think that is a solution to a problem like those cells, you have as much business trying transference spells as an ogre does playing the dulcimer, Rashan snapped. I have no idea how you managed to find your way to Vaedris, or how you managed to survive channeling that much ether to make the trip. I would suggest you put any notion to trying that trip again far back into the reaches of your mind. Thank fate, gods, or what have you, for the luck that you survived it once, and do not tempt them again. With the power you have, someday you may unravel that mystery, but for now, you are just a fire hurler.
You are speaking of winters, not days. Kyrus spoke softly, almost to himself, despite addressing the warlock.
Tens of winters, more like, Rashan corrected.
Kyrus swallowed, finding a sudden lump in his throat.
Come upstairs for a moment. I wish to demonstrate something for you.
Rashan stood and headed up the stairs to the inner sanctum.
Decades. I will learn life extension. Abelay will grow old. Davin will pass away. If I ever make it back, what would I be going back to? In decades, what would Brannis be returning to? An old man, suddenly and mysteriously bereft of magic? If I cannot manage to return rather soon, I may not end up making the trip at all.
Kyrus blinked back his inner monologue long enough to remember that he ought to be following Rashan. He headed up the stairway after the warlock. This chamber is warded against violence, so it ought to be a bit safer. None of the others are around right now, so it is just the two of us, Rashan said, standing in the middle of the room. Come down here. Kyrus silently levitated himself down to the bottom of the chamber, where guests of the inner circle would present themselves. Rashan watched, shaking his head. It is like watching a blacksmith swing his anvil at a hammer to make horseshoes. I cannot fathom the amount of ether you waste with that shabby technique of yours. We shall work on that later, but for now, a demonstration of the worthlessness of hurled ether, Rashan said. Kyrus saw a shielding spell spring to life around him. Even the simplest of shields thwarts it. You may have been able to destroy a wall with it once you drained it of ether. Rashan shook his head, still incredulous about Kyrus's claim. But any construct of ether will stop it entirely. Now, if there is any mishap, stray fire ought not hurt anything in this room due to the wards. But I thought the wards prevented all violence within the sanctum, Kyrus said. Only in the Academy texts and the half-copper tours of Cadrus. I killed Gravis Archon in here, and the wards did little enough to save him. The wards protect the inner circle. They do not protect against those so powerful as we. Rashan looked meaningfully at the hole in the wall, still unrepaired after a season in power. The warlock had left it as a symbol, a warning. Now go stand over there and hit me with everything you can manage. Just hurled fire, mind you. Fine, Kyrus agreed. He walked over to the supplicant's entrance to the chamber and turned. He drew in some ether and hurled it right at Rashan as fire. As promised, it turned harmlessly aside against his shield. Well now, someone thinks he is being clever again. You are not going to believe me until you see your best effort fail. Now try again, like you mean it. I was going to let Iridan and Juliana out of those cells in time for dinner tonight, but if you continue to try my patience, I just might leave them down there the whole 5 days, Rashan snarled, goading Kyrus with what he hoped was an idle threat. Despite seeing through the barb, Kyrus felt his heart begin to pound, and the edges of his vision grow fuzzy.
So I am stranded here on Vaedris, most likely. I will never see Abelay again. It falls to me to protect Juliana, just as Brannis would. Brannis, if you are watching right now, take care of Abelay for me. Make her happy.
Kyrus drew hard against the ether, and Rashan's eyes widened in shock. A moment later, there was a second hole to the outdoors in the Tower of Contemplation, and the regent of the Kadrin Empire had been jettisoned through it. It had passed through from the lower sanctum wall, through the warlock's office, and to the open sky beyond. Kyrus walked to the edge of the hole with growing trepidation. He had hoped to spend his anger against the warlock's shield. It had not occurred to him that he would shred that shield and blow the warlock through the building. He looked around to the palace grounds below and saw Rashan, charred and nearly naked, rising unsteadily to his feet. In the ether, Kyrus was very interested to see that wisps of ether rose from the warlock's exposed source. As he watched, the ether flow slowed and ceased. The charred flesh regenerated itself. A makeshift wardrobe of ether formed about him. Rashan walked unsteadily to the base of the tower and looked up at Kyrus. I stand corrected, Rashan called up to him. I'm sorry, I did not mean to... No, it was my fault underestimating you. We will speak of it again, but I think I ought to head down to the dungeons and see about releasing the newly married couple. Not sure what I was thinking. Was no point in locking them up as well. Rashan trailed off and then wandered away. Kyrus found himself alone in the warlock's office. Mischief was uncommon to his nature, but there was a heady feeling welling up in him, making him bold. He found a particular book, one that he had come to hate. It was a book of names, names of sorcerers and sorceresses. He found the entry he sought with little trouble. Brannis Solaran. F. Maruk Solaran. M. Lefalia Solaran. Sharness. the whole of which had been crossed out with a double line, accompanied by a notation in a different handwriting, unsuitable. Kairos took up a quill and ink, his preferred weapons, and crossed out the un.